Radio 4. And now this afternoon, a chance to hear this week's Saturday Night Theatre from Manchester.
Taxi! Taxi!
Hardman Crescent, Victoria Park, please.
If we can get through the floods, the rubber dinghy and oars will be better in some parts today.
Oh, that bad, is it?
Even worse in the south, according to the evening news. Here, see for yourself.
Thanks.
What it really, on account of that Manchester copper? You know, the police inspector.
Oh, yeah?
No wonder he was suspended, pending his trial. Working on a drugs case, he was. He'd just come back from Germany when he stopped in the street by one of his superiors. And surprise, surprise, in his briefcase he found 8,000 in German marks. You don't need to be a genius to find the right answer.
We find the defendant, John Christopher Rourke, not guilty.
We present Brian Truman, Jane Knowles, and Jeffrey Banks in The Dark Windows of a Room by William Keenan, a first production from the drama suite of New Broadcasting House, Manchester. Among those making guest appearances for the occasion are Violet Carson, Nigel Davenport, Brian Forbes, Wilfred Pickles, Philip Jenkinson, and Billy Whitelaw. The Dark Windows of a Room.
I said you don't have to be a genius to find the right answer, do you?
No. No, but he claims the money was planted.
A backhander? A bribe? That's what it was. It's the old, old story. The police stop a thief, find the boot of his car full of loot, and what does the thief say?
What does the thief say?
He says, I don't understand it. That isn't mine. I just don't know how it got there, officer.
I think the inspector was telling the truth.
Well, you're on your own there, mate. You hear a lot when you're driving a taxi, and I've been told that this inspector fellow...
Rourke,
that's him. His divisional officers didn't lose much time in suspending him from the force pending further inquiries. Johnny Rourke was a bit too clever by half.
Clever? What do you mean, clever?
Oh, one of these bright young uns straight from university. They walk a beat for a few nights, and then they promote him up to inspector. I say walk. But when did you last see a copper on a beat? All hiding round corners in cars. The other night in Piccadilly Gardens, a gang of six yobbos set on a bloke, put the boot in, not a copper in sight. A few of us on the rank went in with tire levers, or else the fellow would have been dead. Up comes a panda car when it's all over.
Well, I'd agree with you about needing more men on the beat.
Aye, but some real big beefy lads. Brawn, not university brains. Here. I'll tell you something more about Inspector John Rourke. He studied history. Henry VIII. What do you think of that?
Broadens the mind.
So does driving a taxi, but that doesn't make me a policeman.
Ah, oh, but Elizabethan England was a police state, and the Tudors had one of the finest spy systems in the world.
You seem a bit of an historian yourself.
I studied the period for 14 years.
You a teacher, then?
No.
Oh, you see that bloody fool come right across me? Oh, I might have known. Woman driver. Oh, I agree with the fact that women don't have many accidents. They just cause them. You know, you're belting along a straight road, then a woman suddenly appears from a side street. You swerve, miss her, and hit a bleeding lamppost.
You can drop me at the next corner.
Right. In the news, early edition, it said the jury was out considering the verdict. What have they got to consider?
Whether the money was planted or not.
Well, that shouldn't take them long to decide. But they say we've got the finest justice in the world.
That's what the lawyers say. Wasn't always without fear or favour, though.
Well, this do you?
Yeah, sure.
I'd wait till it eases up a bit. Look at that. Like someone's thrown a bucket of water on the windscreen. You were saying about British justice in the old days,
Oh, well, Tudor judges hanged and quartered many a man just because he wanted to worship the same way his father did. And all those secret panels and priest hiding holes in the stately homes of England. Well, they just go to show that Tudor justice was hardly the finest or the fairest.
You should have been a history teacher.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
By the way, didn't I pick you up near the Crown Court?
Yes.
You weren't at the trial by any chance?
I was.
You're a lawyer then?
No, I'm not a lawyer.
Now, wait a minute. You know a lot about history.
Yes, I'm John Rourke. And just for the record, the jury gave me the benefit of the doubt. I don't care what you heard. Inspector Rourke isn't a crook. And he's going to prove it.
How?
Well, first by finding a phone and going back to the beginning. Here, what do I owe you?
Oh, nothing. It'll teach me to button up my big mouth.
Central Police Station.
Extension 350, please.
One moment, sir. Harris.
Chief Inspector, this is John Rourke.
Rourke?
The jury found me not guilty.
So we just heard.
You seem disappointed.
Why should I be disappointed?
Oh, some people are, I understand. Very disappointed. Just hope you're not one of them.
If I had been, I would have slammed the phone down on you.
That's true.
Well, what can I do for you?
Meet me in a quiet pub.
You must be joking. Our faces are too well known.
All right, then. What time would you be passing the Central Library on your way home?
In about half an hour.
Well, if you see a rather bedraggled individual standing in the rain, you might give him a lift.
Jump in.
Thanks.
You look soaked to the skin. Sorry, I'm 10 minutes later than planned.
It's good of you to stick your neck out, Frank.
Even though I arrested you with the money in your briefcase, I don't think you were being bribed. Well, now the court bit's over, you want to tell me how the money came to be there?
Well, it was planted.
In my years in the force, John, I've rarely met a more dedicated detective. You came straight from university, plunged into police work, and every spare minute you were studying police procedure, law books, or researching Tudor history.
Yeah.
Just before you were arrested, I was planning to send you on an ATW course.
What?
Attitudes to Work course. Now, in the modern world, everyone is so busy and immersed in what he's doing that he's hardly time to sit down and think. Many are too involved in their work and may have their priorities wrong. The course makes them think things out. Whether they're giving off time to their families, their hobbies. Everything has to be balanced.
And you thought with me something was a little bit out of balance.
I thought you could do with a girlfriend, a hobby, or both, yes. What I'm also trying to say is that somebody who was conscientious enough to be working too hard would scarcely take 8,000 marks to hush something up.
Well, thanks for your confidence in me.
What are your plans?
Well, 4 months waiting for trial gave me time for a personal attitudes to work course. I obviously stumbled on something that somebody thought was worth that amount of guilt to keep the lid on. And it worked beautifully. I'm out of the force, off the case, and 4 months have passed placidly by.
But you're going to try to pick up the scent?
Smell would be a better word. The whole thing stinks. Yep. I'm going to clear my name if it takes me from now to eternity.
Take care. Remember, you're not reinstated. Once suspended, it takes time. And there are a lot of villains who'd love to get their hands on you in a dark alley.
Well, then I'll just have to take that risk.
Look, why not emigrate to Australia and start a new life in the sun?
Because I'm innocent. If I emigrate, everyone will assume I'm running away. With the final proof for some people that I was guilty. Got off scot-free. We only live once. I want to be able to walk around with my head up and my chin out. I want proof of innocence that's so conclusive, Frank, I can get back on the force.
Well, it's up to you.
You could try sounding a little more encouraging.
You said yourself, we only live once. And I think a lifetime's too short for what you're trying to do.
You mean there isn't much hope of ever getting back on the force?
I mean just that.
Now, what would you do if you were me?
I'd go to Australia and teach history.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll do that. After I've cleared my name.
What the hell's up with him?
The bus driver's way of telling you he'd like us to move on, I think.
Good evening, sir. Welcome to the Club Crazy Horse.
Oh, Mr. Rourke.
Surprised to see me, Harry.
I saw the verdict in the late editions. Well, then, what do you have, Mr. Rourke?
Same I was having the last time I was here, the night they picked me up outside. Do you remember what I was drinking?
Police asked me the same question. You were drinking red wine. It was a new bottle we were trying, a French claret. You liked it.
How many did I have?
3 glasses, Mr. Rourke.
Well, pour me a glass of red wine then, Harry.
1 red wine, sir. God, you know, at lunchtime, this is getting more popular than scotch.
One for yourself?
Oh, thanks, Mr. Rourke.
Okay. Cheers.
Cheers. Well, I'll mind later if you don't mind, sir.
Tell me, Harry, where did I put my briefcase when I came in that night?
You stood at the bar and put it by your feet. On your left, I think.
Correct. I went to the gents once. Left the briefcase, as you say. 4 months now, I've been remembering who was at the bar. There was a slim blonde, about mid-twenties. Big Irishman over the other side there. A fellow with a bowler and a rolled umbrella.
Oh, yes, sir. That be Hilda, Paddy Dooley, and Mr. Charles Vickers, the accountant. Mr. Vickers comes in every night for a quick one and then goes for his train. Mm. Well, in fact, he leaves at exactly 6:07 in order to get his 6:23 train.
Well, I was picked up just before 6:30. I visited the gents just before leaving, so Mr. Vickers must already have left. Unless he was late that night.
Oh, Mr. Vickers has never been late, Mr. Rourke. Not in all the time he's been coming here.
That leaves Paddy Dooley and Hilda. Did either of them go near my briefcase?
Not that I can remember, Mr. Rourke. Hilda was stood nearest to it. She was just on your left. In fact, I thought at first she might be trying to pick you up. Couldn't help wondering what her reaction would be if she found out you were a detective inspector. Mm.
Where can I find Hilda?
Don't know much about her. She's German, I know that much. And from bits of conversation I overheard, I gather she was a student here.
Studying what, Harry? Club life in England?
Good question, sir. She came in quite a bit. It seems strange, that, if she were studying over here.
You said came in quite a bit. You mean she hasn't been in lately?
That's the funny thing about it, Mr. Rourke. Don't recollect her coming in here since that night.
And now, at 6:10, here is the Northern News, read by Geoffrey Wheeler. At Manchester Crown Court today, John Rook, an inspector with Manchester Police C Division, was found not guilty on a charge of bribery and corruption. Inspector Rook, who resides in Victoria Park, has stated on several occasions since his arrest,
"That Mrs. Lee of number 37 Victoria Park does the best casserole of braised neck with carrots and onions known to her lodger." By far the best.
Well, even without such compliments, it's grand to have you back, John.
Even after all the publicity, Mrs. Lee?
I make up my own mind about folk.
Most people still seem to think I'm guilty.
Well, they think what they choose to think. The Summers is never content unless they can think the worst. And I didn't need that jury to tell me you'd never do out that's wrong, John Rourke. Oh, I'm glad I heard it all the same. Now, are you ready for trifle, or am I more of that casserole before you get down to trifle?
Oh, Mrs. Lee, I couldn't eat another second healthy.
There's nothing gives a woman who fancies herself as a cook greater pleasure than seeing somebody with a good appetite wolf it down.
Oh, did I wolf it down, then?
Well, let me put it this way. You act as though you were in need of a good meal. You seem to have lost a bit of weight.
Well, prison remand food wasn't up to your standards, Mrs. Lee.
Ah, well, it'll put a bit of the weight back and keep out the cold. Oh, by the way, while you weren't here...
You mean while I was inside?
Oh, I was trying to avoid that unpleasant word.
Oh, I don't mind.
Well, while you were waiting trial, that book you sent for came.
Professor Scarsbrick's biography of Henry VIII.
Yes, that's him. His face was on the cover.
Oh, God.
You see, it's been opened. Postman rang the bell. He seemed a bit embarrassed.
Yeah, must have thought I was smuggling more marks in.
Yes, well, they had the cheek to open it all the same.
But I sent for another book, too. R.H. Benson, Come Rack, Come Rope.
Yes, there is another parcel in your room, John. That was intact. Oh,
thanks, Mrs. Lee. You're a treasure. Next time I get bribed, I'll cut you in for 50%.
Bottle of the day. You're as likely to take a bribe as to go any old ladies over the head to steal her handbag.
I think I'll nominate you as the best, most trusting landlady in the world, Mrs. Lee.
Hey, you know what I'm thinking? I think we ought to have a little celebration.
Why not? Let's see what's on at the pictures.
Well, we can do that later, but first we'll have a glass of wine. I got a bottle of hock for Christmas, and this is as good a time as any to open it. You'll find it in the sideboard there, together with the bottle opener.
Okay.
Not too much now.
All right. There we are. One for you.
And one for me.
There you are. You've filled my glass more than you have your own.
Well, you put more food on my plate than you do on your own. Cheers.
To your future, love.
Bleak as it may seem. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, sorry to ring you at home, Chief Inspector.
My gal, you are. But I'd prefer you to ring here, Rourke, from the office. What can I do for you?
I'm anxious to catch up with a German girl called Hilda. She was next to me in the bar the night I was arrested.
You're telling me nothing new, Rourke.
Do you know where I could find her?
No. I've been looking for her for 4 months. Her full name is Hilda Schiller.
Sure. How do you spell that?
S-C-H-I-L-L-E-R.
What have you got on her?
Well, she's been here about 18 months, supposedly studying English literature at Manchester University.
Why supposedly?
Because for the last 9 months, she hardly attended one lecture, but she frequented most of the night spots of the city.
Mm. Any in particular?
The one you've just visited, the Crazy Horse. Mm. And then there's Tramp's Delight and Mr. Pips. She painted the town red, sometimes in the company of an American. Now, don't ask me which American. We've been trying to trace him for the last 4 months, also without success.
You don't mind if I go over the same ground?
You've nothing to lose. But be careful.
Oh, thanks for the concern.
Oh, and there was one other spot she often used to go in, the Junction. That's that place that, like an old railway station with lamps, signals, the lot, even steam trains. Oh,
it's a long time since I had a ride on a steam train.
Aye, well, don't get too nostalgic. And, John, keep your eyes open.
Welcome to the Junction Club, sir. Have you a companion?
I'm on my own.
Oh, very good, sir.
Seem quiet tonight. Apart from the silly sound effect.
It's a little early. In about 2 hours, it'll be bursting at the seams. Ah, you can cross the track to the bar now the gate is open, sir.
Oh. Don't I need a signalling lamp?
No signalling lamp, sir. But we do have flags on the bar, like the train guards used to wave.
What'll it be, sir?
Glass of red wine.
Would you be taking it to the dining car?
What?
The dining car, sir. It's the main floor space, sir.
God, what's this supposed to be? The water tower?
Well, it does tend to be a little overdone, the railway thing. You know, the waiters have to serve the food as if they were swaying about on a moving train.
Well, all the more reason to stay here. Swaying waiters might turn my stomach over.
French or Spanish red wine, sir?
What else is on the label?
Nothing. It's all plonk from the barrel. Rough. I'd recommend the white.
I'll take your recommendation, then. Are you having one with me?
Yeah, thank you. I'll make it a beer. One white plonk, not as rough.
Cheers. I was wondering who this place appeals to.
Oh, younger set, mostly. We also get some Americans from the base of Burwell.
Oh. Do you ever have an American coming in with a German girl called Hilda?
So that was her name, Hilda. Some kind of student she was supposed to be.
Hilda Schiller.
Yes, I think I do remember him calling her Hilda.
Why did you say that was her name?
I don't know. She hasn't been here for a long time.
And she and her American boyfriend were regulars?
Yeah.
How regular?
Hey, are you a policeman or something?
Oh, I'm looking for her, if that's what you mean.
3 times a week. They used to go on from here to another club, Mr. Pips. Why don't you try there?
And nothing you say is making me cry again.
Excuse me. Which is the manager's office?
Over to the right, up the fire escape. First door on the right as you turn the corner.
Thanks. My name's John Rourke.
Yes, the couple got off scot-free.
The jury found me not guilty.
I'm sorry, I didn't intend to sound so blunt.
That's okay. Half the city's convinced I'm guilty.
To be candid, I was one of them.
Yes. Well, for your information, I'm still trying to find how those marks got into my briefcase.
For your information, Rourke, I didn't put them there.
I never thought you did. I'm looking for one of your customers, a German girl. Hilda Schiller.
A German girl used to come in regularly, yes.
With an American?
That's right, a flyer from the U.S. base in Burwell.
Do you know his name?
Your police colleagues have already asked for the same questions. I tell you what I told them. Neither have been in for months. I'm glad. I didn't like the look of them. I was on the verge of banning them from the pub anyway.
Why?
I got that feeling they were looking the place over. They were about to start something. Don't ask me what, because I don't know. It was just something I felt in my war turn. What did you say the girl's name was?
You too.
I don't get it. What about me?
You're the second person tonight to use the past tense talking about the girl. The name's Hilda. Hilda Schiller.
Is that the guy walking down the side street?
That's him.
He was asking about Hilda Schiller?
That's the name, all right.
Okay, Stan. Let's go. And your kingdom.
What's the total damage?
Oh, I'm afraid you'll have to ask the doctor, Mr. Rourke. But I can say you've been very fortunate.
Oh, sure. Yeah, at this moment, with every bit of me coming apart from every other bit, it's difficult to imagine my good fortune, sister.
There's someone to see you, so I'll give you a sedative afterwards.
Good evening, John. How are you feeling?
Oh, could be worse, so they say.
The doctor's ordered that Mr. Rourke must be kept quiet, so it'd be better if he didn't stay too long.
Very good, sister.
Ward to myself, I see.
Aye. And the uniformed policeman outside the door.
What?
Calm down. Remember the doctor's orders.
Look, am I right in thinking that policeman isn't there entirely for my protection?
You are?
I see. So I'm to be kept quiet. And then you waltz in and tell me I'm virtually under arrest after somebody's tried to kill me. Well, frankly, it's enough to upset a saint.
I'm talking to you now as a friend, John. I thought it would be better coming from me.
Speak friend.
Look, let's skip the irony, shall we? There are some people who think that this attempt on your life could have been faked.
All right. So I hired somebody to try and run over me with a car. Even that doesn't warrant a policeman outside the ward door.
It isn't only that.
Isn't it? Well, for a person who's supposed to be kept quiet, it's more than enough for me.
John, they'll leave you alone until the doctor says you're fit to be questioned. Maybe tomorrow, the day after, or a week hence. But whenever it is, do you want to be questioned officially by whoever's given the case? Or would you like me to put you in the picture right now?
Yeah, well, I'm still suffering from shock, and it's easy to take advantage of me.
Well, of course, if that's what you think, there's no more to be said. I'll leave you in peace.
I'm sorry. It was no fake accident. It strengthens my faith in guardian angels.
Well, you were inches from eternity, all right. A woman said you moved at the very last second. The car caught your right side, sent you spinning onto the bonnet of a parked car and sideways onto its windscreen. The doctor tells me you've escaped with a broken arm, dislocated shoulder, and that you have severe bruising on buttock and shoulder of right side, together with scalp lacerations from broken windscreen.
I remember walking between cars parked on each side of that narrow road by Richard Street. The engine. There wasn't even time to turn round. Still don't know what made me jump out the way.
John, most of the night, you'd been going round the clubs, asking about a German girl called Hilda Schiller.
Right, ever since you gave me a name. In fact, I went straight out looking for her. I said I would. Don't you remember warning me to be careful?
I'd be grateful if you didn't tell them you got a name from me, John.
What's going on?
Exactly 11 minutes before someone tried to run you down, a body was found floating in the ship canal.
Whose body?
The body of the girl you'd spent most of the night asking about. A German student called Hilda Schiller.
Good morning, Mr.
morning, Mr. Rourke. Did you sleep well?
I think you gave me enough to put 8 elephants to sleep, sister.
Oh, you were very upset when your friend left. He said so himself.
Oh, he said I was upset, did he?
Yes. I suggested you needed extra sedation. I think a good nightcap was the word he used. Is he a very close friend?
I don't have many close friends. He's a colleague.
Oh, I see.
I graduated and went straight into the police force. There's a lot to study. Every few months I seem to be learning a new job with different responsibilities.
I see from your notes that you aren't married. But haven't you a girlfriend?
No.
Oh, a handsome fellow like you, then why not?
Oh, marriage doesn't appeal to me. Perhaps the right person hasn't come along. Perhaps I spent far too much time trying to be the perfect policeman. Look where that's landed me. What the hell am I going on about? I'm sorry for being so maudlin.
Anna, don't apologize. It's the effect of being in hospital. Patients often talk like that. They feel better afterwards.
Like confession.
As a wee girl in Ireland, I was taught the expression, confession is good for the soul. Now, let me have a look at those bruises before you get dressed.
Get dressed?
Well, your friend is here again.
Colleague, not friend, sister. An ex-colleague at that.
Yeah. I understand you're feeling a little better this morning.
Oh, yeah? Who told you that?
Well, the doctor thinks that if you wanted to, it would be all right to have a short journey by car.
To the cells, you mean?
No, John. Just a matter of routine identification.
Why? You caught the driver of the car that hit me?
No.
Have you found the car?
Not yet.
Well, where does this routine identification fit in?
We want you to identify the body of Hilda Schiller.
Why, me?
You saw her in the club just before your arrest.
Great. I'm still suffering physically from being hit by a car and still in a state of shock. You show me a dead body that's been in the water for some time, another setback. And then while I'm still disturbed, you start throwing questions, hoping I'll eventually make a statement that incriminates me.
Oh, nothing of the kind.
Oh, yeah, sure.
The doctor, Chief Inspector Norris. I understand he told you that Mr. Rourke should not get out of bed today.
Huh?
In fact, in his opinion, Mr. Rourke should not move from this bed for the next 3 days.
Well, he did agree that if Mr. Rourke wanted to get up...
At your insistence, the doctor reluctantly said that if Mr. Rourke insisted on discharging himself, we, the hospital, can do nothing about it. And by getting out of bed and going with you, Mr. Rourke would be discharging himself. Did you tell Mr. Rourke just that, Chief Inspector?
Not exactly. I merely asked if he would accompany us to help us with the matter of an identification, sister.
Mr. Rourke, you don't need to go. You're not fit to go. Now, Chief Inspector, if you put any further pressure on my patient, I will make an official complaint to the Home Office.
Now, there's no need to take such drastic steps, sister. I'll leave your patient in
peace. Now, everyone hold their horses. Thanks, sister, for getting your Irish paddy up and putting Chief Inspector Norris in his place, but I'm quite prepared to go along with him. I want to show my willingness to cooperate. Make a note of how cooperative I'm being while the sister helps me to get dressed, Norris.
Helps you, indeed. I'll do no such thing. If you're going to discharge yourself, then you'll dress yourself as well. And what's so important that he can't wait a few more days?
A specially conducted tour of a mortuary.
Is that the woman you saw in the bar just before your arrest?
God. How long's she been in the water?
Is that the woman?
Well, from what's left of her, it looks like it.
But you're not sure?
How could anybody be?
It looks like her, you said?
Yes.
All right, you can put it back. We're getting further identification, and we're sent for a dental record.
Well, now I've cooperated with your request, Chief Inspector. I'm going to refuse to accompany you anywhere else. In other words, you can go to blazes or arrest me. And if you do arrest me, when your case falls apart, and it will, I'll sue for false arrest. Good morning and goodbye.
Now, wait a minute, John. I'm only doing my duty.
Yes, that's what the axman said to the Queen he was executing.
I was also about to say that having brought you here, the least I can do is buy you a coffee and take you back to your flat.
Beware Greeks bearing gifts.
Don't you trust me?
No.
I had to convince myself you were innocent, John.
And are you convinced?
Oh, come on. Let's have that coffee. Yours is milk but no sugar.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, there's a quiet table over here.
Well, I should give up sugar too. What they say, dairy produce is even worse. Butter and eggs, I read, were the killers.
Look, I'm sure you didn't invite me for a coffee so you could discuss the merits of the English breakfast.
No, I didn't. As a matter of fact, there were one or two things I wanted to discuss with you. And thanks for cooperating in identifying the late Miss Schiller.
Yeah.
You were right.
I was trying shock tactics to see how you reacted.
Quite sure you're satisfied?
Yes, I'm satisfied.
Mm. You ought to be.
But one of the points I want to talk to you about is what happened in Hamburg.
What do you mean?
Well, I read your report, but was there anything you left out?
Such as?
You should know better than me, John.
Well, I don't, and if you're trying to imply I deliberately covered something up, you're way out, Chief Inspector.
I just want you to tell me all you remember about it, starting at the very beginning.
Well, I went over to Hamburg to pick up a merchant navy officer on a grievous bodily harm charge, Ben Hallett. Case comes up in the Crown Court in a few weeks' time.
What happened?
Oh, nothing happened. It's just routine. I went and collected him from the Hamburg police. When we got back here, I told him about the allegations made against him by the victim.
Was he surprised?
Not surprised. Seemed relieved. As much as admitted it by saying it was nothing more than a barroom brawl. I told him the injuries to the man he'd attacked were more than a barroom brawl. He said he had it coming to him. I remember the exact words because I tried to find out why he had it coming to him, but Hallett wasn't giving any more away. So I formally charged him. Mm-hmm. When we searched him, we found he was in possession of cannabis, so we added another charge.
Hmm. And 2 days later, you were found with the German marks in your briefcase.
Could be just a coincidence.
You think so?
No. No, I don't. I think there is some connection, but I've racked my brains to find it.
But what happened the following day, the one before you were arrested?
Nothing. My day off.
What did you do on your day off?
I read a book written by an Elizabethan, John Gerard. Mm-hmm. That was in the morning. And in the afternoon, I went to visit an Elizabethan manor house, Bramborne. I was doing a report on it for a preservation society.
Bramborne Manor?
Yeah. You seem surprised.
Yeah. Isn't that near the American air base at Burwell?
It's about 5 miles away, but what's the connection?
We think it was an American who hit you. The woman witness said it was a big American car, and one of the passengers seemed to be in uniform. We're checking all the cars at Burwell Base.
I still don't see the tie-up between the airbase and the manor.
Who owns the manor now?
No one. Last owner was Ralph Fitzhugh. He was hanged outside his own front door for having a mass said in the house.
How long ago was that?
All of 360 years ago. No one's lived at Bramborne since 1939. The place has gradually crumbled. No, I'm wrong. The War Department took the place over together with the airbase. Yeah, that's right. They let the Americans have it. I think they used it as an officer's mess for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They did plan to repair and restore it. The Americans, that is. And then the squadron moved to another base, and the new commander found the mess nearer the airfield.
There's something about the place that started my copper sixth sense working overtime. Bramborne Manor. You know, John, the name cropped up too many times. Apart from that, I don't know. I was hoping your historical researchers could have enlightened me. Do you want another coffee?
No, thanks.
You're gazing into your cup like it was a crystal ball.
I was just thinking, it is strange that the manor was the last place I visited before those marks were found in my briefcase.
I'll tell you something else. I searched that manor and its grounds with a squad of policemen and dogs for 3 days. There's nothing there. What makes you smile?
So did Persuivants.
Who are they?
Persuivants, so sort of private enterprise policeman, bounty hunter, and freebooter rolled into one.
Never heard of them?
Well, for the solution to most problems, it's necessary to go back into history.
What, like Northern Ireland, you mean?
Well, like most political problems.
Well, how can it help us in this case?
Well, something you said gave me an idea. Started me thinking along very strange lines. Could lead nowhere. First of all, I'd like to get back to my flat and see if Weston can give me any clues.
Who?
William Weston. He was an Elizabethan.
It's for you, Mr. Rook.
What is?
You have a visitor, a lady.
What the hell can that be?
Oh, he gets out of one of these stairs every day. Mr. Rook, I see you've been keeping a secret.
A secret?
Well, and who might this foreign girl be who's come round to see you that you haven't been letting on about? Go put a tie on, look your best, eh?
I haven't got a foreign girlfriend. I haven't got a girlfriend. Full stop.
Well, she seemed to know you. Is Mr. Rook in, she asked? Knew you? Knew you lived here?
I can't wait to know who my mysterious foreign female visitor is. I'm not putting a tie on, Mrs. Lee.
Have it your own way, then. I think she must be German.
German?
Well, she speaks very good English, with just a slight accent. And then her name?
What name?
Schiller, she said. Miss
Schiller.
Constable Harris.
Yes, Chief Inspector.
You're quite literate, aren't you?
How do you mean?
You spend a great deal of your time sitting on your backside doing crosswords, don't you?
I do the occasional crossword.
Then it must take you a hell of a long time to complete it. That occasional crossword for all occasions?
Well, it's not as bad as that, Chief Inspector.
Yes, well, this is what I want you to find out. Learn all you can about poor Sweevance. Then find out if any of them had any connection with the American Air Base and Burwold.
Eh?
You heard. Just pretend you're doing your crossword.
But
Don't tell me you don't know what a poor Sweevant is.
Well, I would say its root is pro, forth, and sequi follow. Onwards follow, or something like that. Wait a minute, I just remembered there's an inferior officer of the College of Heralds. He's a poor Sweevant.
I don't think it's that one.
Well, it could also be connected with the verb pursue.
Aye, well, go and pursue the matter then. And don't come back until you can tell me all about it, Harris.
I'll start by talking to the head librarian at the Central Library.
Before you go, you can let me have the list of items we found on the dead Schiller girl.
Oh, very good, sir. It's right here on my desk.
Where on your desk?
It was under my paper. I folded it in half to do the crossword.
Miss Schiller, did you say?
That is correct, Mr. Rourke.
You have the advantage of me, Miss Schiller. I don't remember having met you before.
I understand you knew my sister. My sister Hilda, who was recently found murdered. You have been asking about her.
Now, just you come and sit down, look. Push a chair near the fire, Father, Mr. Rourke. She looks like a drowned rat.
I have been walking around since late last night.
You take your coat off and I'll hang it up by the kitchen radiator. And I'll bring your towels to dry your hair.
Oh, thank you.
You flew into Manchester?
Yes. The German police broke the news to us in the early hours of the morning. I dressed and took the first plane here. I just cannot believe it.
A good hot cup of tea. That's what you need.
Your English and your tea.
I think you want to know why I was looking for your sister.
Please, yes.
I used to be a police detective inspector in this city. Till one night German money was found in my briefcase and I was accused of corruption. The other day a jury found me not guilty, but the smear is still there. I want to clear my name by finding out why those marks were planted on me.
I understand. But what has this to do with my sister, Hilda?
I suspect it was your sister who put the marks in my briefcase.
Oh, it seems to get worse and worse. The more I learn, the more terrible this thing seems to be.
What can you tell me about your sister?
What do you want to know?
Everything you can remember.
I can see her face as a little girl. She was always mischievous, always busy, always so happy.
When did things start going wrong?
Not until she went to the university. She wanted to take a degree and teach backward children. At first she was doing quite well. But then she mixes with bad people.
How did you know they were bad?
By their way of life. To use an old-fashioned phrase, their lack of morals. I found Hilda was living with one of them. That was the beginning of it all. At first she argued it was love and idealized her relationship. For him, it was a convenient, temporary satisfaction. Inevitably, he moved into another casual relationship and left Hilda's flat. She was shattered. I suspect my sister turned to drugs. About this time, she started an affair with an American airman who had served in Vietnam and other areas in Southeast Asia. He frightened me.
You met him?
Twice only. I tried to keep in regular contact with Hilda. Yet I had the feeling she didn't want me to meet him. But once he came to her flat while I was there.
What was he like, this American?
A short man. His eyes seemed to rove all over you. He made you feel uncomfortable. Hilda made excuses for him. She said he'd flown many missions in Vietnam and had been living on his nerves. It could have been that. But I think it was something much deeper.
Was he a pilot?
I'm not quite sure. I think so.
Do you know why your sister came to England?
No. I don't know why or how she managed to get into an English university with her poor results. Mm. But one thing I am sure about, he was behind it. He wanted her over here. The exchange scheme she came under was incidental.
Here's your cup of tea, love. Oh. You take milk and sugar?
Oh, black, please.
You don't have black tea in England. That's for coffee. You've had a shock, love, and something hot and sweet is what you get for shock. Here now.
Thank you.
Here's yours, Mr. Rourke.
Oh, thanks.
You, young lady, you look fair, don't end.
I still cannot believe she was murdered. Do you know, I came here with the idea of avenging her death. I thought it was you, Mr. Rourke. But you have too kind a face for a killer. The way people live is written on their faces.
Now, drink up your tea, love.
Oh, please call me Anna.
Well, Anna, you can get your feet up and have a rest, love, and I'll stay with you. Mr. Rourke can be doing some reading in his own room.
Oh, message understood, Mrs. Lee.
I'm going to have steak, dumplings and chips for tea. I'll call you when it's ready, Mr. Rourke.
Can I help you at all, Mrs. Lee?
Oh, you've waited up. How are you feeling?
Much better, thank you, Mrs. Lee.
Good. Yes, you can be warming these plates, if you will. The chips are nearly ready, and then you can call Mr. Rourke.
These plates?
Yes, those are the ones, and I put them on this plate rack above the grill.
Is Mr. Rourke upstairs?
Yes, his room's first left at the top of the stairs. Always best to knock on his door, because sometimes he gets so engrossed in the book he wouldn't be in the gold door.
Coming. I'm famished. Oh, sorry. I thought it was Mrs. Lee.
She asked me to tell you that the meal is almost ready.
Thank you.
What a lot of books you have.
Aha. Come and see my etchings. They're quite safe with me and my arm in a sling. Not to mention the tightly bound rib cage.
Your etchings. I understand that English joke.
You're very attractive when you smile, Anna.
Please, Mr. Rourke. I know you mean to be kind. I also know I have a plain face, and I feel very spinsterish and schoolteacherish at times.
Well, you said yourself the way people live's written on their faces. Yours is a kind, dedicated face.
Thank you. I'm very happy with my work.
Teaching handicapped children?
Yes. I think the secret of happiness is giving yourself to others without expecting any thanks.
Strange that two sisters should seem to be so different.
I am to blame as much as anyone for Hilda. Our father died 7 months after Hilda was born. Our mother died 4 years ago, being ill for many months. I wondered all the way here in the plane how much more time I should have given to Hilda instead of to my studies. It must have been a very bad time for her. Perhaps it might have been better to...
To have what?
Oh, to have married and stayed on the farm. There was a young man who wanted to marry me, but I'm sure he proposed out of sympathy. He was a good person with a very strong sense of duty.
And you turned him down?
He's now happily married to a very attractive girl who has turned out to be a good wife and mother. Why are you looking at me like that?
I was wondering why you have your hair swept back so severely.
I don't understand your question, Mr. Rock. It is obviously so much neater and tidier this way.
Oh, of course.
I tell you all this about me, but you say nothing.
Oh, well, like you, I've been busy studying, and like you, I had someone in my hometown I might have married.
But you didn't?
No. No, she's a good wife and mother, too. She married the local doctor. Policeman's lot is not a happy one.
Thank you, Mr. Rourke, for your efforts to cheer me up and get me out of my sadness.
My motive was purely selfish, Anna. I asked you questions about your sister to get all the information I could to help clear my name and to find your sister's killer.
I see you read poetry.
I browse.
Ah, Wordsworth. I once had to copy a poem of his when I was learning English. Ah, this is it. My heart leaps up when I behold a rainbow in the sky. So was it when my life began, so is it now I am a man, so be it when I shall grow old, or let me die. The child is father of the man, and I could wish my days to be bound each to each by natural piety. Your English verse is so beautiful, the rhythm so regular that it flows like a stream. How do you call unstressed followed by stress?
Iambic.
Ah, yes. It is the rhythm, not the rhyme, that matters most.
Quite right.
You see, I try to learn my English well, especially the poetry. Back in history, some of your great adventurers and swordsmen were poets, were they not?
They were.
You have a bookmark in what now? Ah, a northern vigil. Read me a short verse, please.
Well, reading aloud's hardly my forte.
I will close my eyes, draw a circle in the air with my finger, and then point to some verse, yes?
Mrs. Lee doesn't like to keep a meal waiting, Anna, and we'll be ready.
You are embarrassed.
No.
Then half a minute's delay while you read a short verse will not upset Mrs. Lee. Please.
All right.
I close my eyes, turn my finger in the air like so. There.
Well, let me see what you've chosen. The windows of my room are dark with bitter frost. The stillness aches with doom of something loved and lost.
I was thinking of choosing something light and happy. But I feel the dark windows of a room are more fitting, more appropriate. I should be in mourning for Hilda, of something loved and lost.
You can't blame yourself for her death.
But I was her sister. If I had given her more time, if I had talked to her more, listened to her problems, who knows? Oh, if I had my time with her over again, how different it would be.
Anna, I'll find who killed her if it takes 10 years.
Isn't that a form of revenge? Wanting her murderer caught and punished?
Justice is a better word. A bleak consolation, I know.
Forgive me. I'm too concerned with myself and my own feelings. I think of Hilda, not of you, and how, because of all this, you lose your job, your good name, you're almost killed, and...
I have a drawer full of men's large white handkerchiefs. Ideal for wiping away tears.
Oh, thank you.
That's it, Anna. Put your head on my poor bandaged shoulder and have a good cry.
But Mrs. Lee will have a meal going cold.
Mrs. Lee would be the first to agree that you'll feel a lot better after a good cry.
Is it better, Lord Spockslob?
Oh, here you are, Mrs. Lee.
Thank you.
Oh, dear. I'll answer it.
Do you manage another sandwich, Will?
224-2987.
Is that you, Rock?
Yes.
I've had young Constable Harris in the Central Library all afternoon looking up poor Sweevens.
Oh, congratulations, Inspector. I never realized you were so concerned with improving the minds of your detectives.
I've been waiting for Harris to return, and I'm still no wiser, Rock. In fact, I think you've been leading me up the garden path, or into a medieval maze. I also think you know more than you've been telling me, so I'd get your coat and hat on. I'm sending Harris round to collect you. Then he can explain to me just where Persuivants fit in.
You'd better get yourself a warrant.
I'll do just that if you like.
Because I won't be coming in voluntarily.
As you wish, Rook.
Look, you know you can't arrest me.
All right. A jury finds you not guilty of taking a backhander in Marks, but then the girl connected with it dies, and now...
What now?
After visiting me the other night, you went to the junction.
I said I did.
You had a nice long chat with the bomb.
I asked him about Hilda Schiller, and he told me they got quite a few Americans from the base at Burwold, and that she sometimes came in with one of them.
What else did he say?
He recommended the white wine.
Did you threaten him?
Threaten him? Why should I?
That's what we'd like to know, Rourke. You see, after you'd had your glass of wine and bought him a beer, you did buy him a beer, didn't you?
Your information is correct. I did buy him a beer, and I did have a glass of wine, white as recommended.
And afterwards you left?
Yes.
He did too. He followed you out. He's never been seen since. Harris is on his way to collect you, Rourke.
Damn the lot of them.
Anything the matter?
I'm going out.
Not in the car, John, and you with an arm in a sling.
Oh, I know. I wonder if Anna can drive me.
I have no English license and insurance, but I drive.
Well, I'm insured for any driver, and what's driving without a license anyway at this stage of the game? I want to find your sister's American friend.
This very minute, Mr. Rourke?
Yes, there's someone coming I don't particularly want to see. My car may be difficult to start. It's been in the garage several months while I was...
While Mr. Rourke was away on business. No, look, I can see to the thoughts. And I'll tell the gentleman what's coming that you just pop round the corner. In fact, I'll make him a cup of tea while he sits and waits for you to come back.
That'd be most helpful. Come on then, Anna.
I saw the sign, Burwold.
We'll stop at the first pub and ask there. Keep to the left. I'll look out for it. Here's a table. What do you have, Anna?
I don't know. I drink very little. Anything will do for me.
I'll get you a sherry.
Yes, sir? Medium sherry and a pint of best mild.
Lovely as night, the beer. Wonderful condition. There's your sherry.
Uh-huh. Still use the old pumps, I see.
Oh, yes. Gives a better top to the pint.
You seem to get plenty of Americans here from the base.
Oh, they like the beer, too.
Did one of them used to come in with a German girl?
You don't mean the girl was found murdered?
Yes.
You a copper?
Yes.
Looked like one to me. I can usually spot one a mile off.
We're looking for the American.
Aye. Saw a lot of people, including some other Americans. Seems to have done a disappearing act 2 days ago. Had something on the slate with me, too. Old money all round, did Max Venner. Yeah. So did his co-pilot. He's vanished, too. Oh, have you nothing small, Miss Pound Notes? I'm a bit short of change tonight.
Sorry, I haven't.
I just manage it, I think. Thank you, sir. Oh, want a tray for that?
Oh, thanks. I can manage.
There we are. One sherry, medium dry.
Thank you.
Something behind me seems to be fascinating you.
It's the barman. I was watching him as he was serving you. He kept glancing to his left. Now he's gone over to speak to the two alert-looking men whose attention he was trying to catch. I think the two men are coming over to us.
Good evening. Do you mind if we sit at this table with you?
We're already sitting at this table. To what do we owe the pleasure?
My name is Marshall Dean, and this is my partner, Dick Cohen. Mm-hmm. We hear you were asking for Max Series co-pilot Stan. Can you tell us why?
To use an English police phrase, I want them to help me in my inquiries.
Likewise. We're Air Force Police.
Look, very well groomed for Air Force Police.
I'd say more like a pair of FBI men. And I'd say you look like the English cop who was accused of corruption.
Oh, Air Force Police, you're very well informed.
And this is Hilda Schiller's sister. I've had a tail on her ever since you got off the plane.
My word, you have done your homework.
If you do find anything of interest, call us, huh? Here's the number. It's manned day and night. We have a big organization behind us, and taxpayers' money to spend.
You didn't by any chance convert any of that taxpayers' money into German marks, say £8,000 worth?
We like your English sense of humor, John. But don't try it on Maxie or Stan. In their off-duty moments, they've been involved in at least 6 killings.
Well, if you'll excuse us, gentlemen, we must be on our way.
Well, we'll be around.
A comforting thought. Good night, Marshal. Good night, Dick.
Good night to you, Anna, John.
There was something disconcerting about those two Americans.
Well, they're meant to be disconcerting.
They don't seem to have followed us out.
Most probably they've got radio cars all around the area, complete with submachine guns.
Who do you think they are?
Not Air Force Police. That's for sure.
Nice to meet you, dear old lady.
Oh, Mr. Rock.
I'm flattered you remember me.
Well, anyone as interested in old buildings as you, and I can never forget them.
Let me introduce a friend of mine, Miss Anna Schiller.
How do you do? Oh, now please do come inside.
What a lovely old world room.
Yes, I was born in this cottage, you know. I've got a ghost upstairs.
Really?
I've often woken to see strange lights above my bed, and then a figure 9. Sometimes I see a man's face.
What I came to see you about, Mrs. Hughes, was the manor.
Ah, yes. I read your article on its preservation. I thought it admirable.
Oh, good. I wondered if you knew anything about its recent history. You know, since it was taken over by the Americans.
Oh, during the war, you mean?
Yes.
Well, there used to be a most charming commander. Unfortunately, he was planning to put cocktail bars in it for the officers' mess. And then he and his squadron moved on, and the other commander decided against it. In some ways it was a good thing, and in other ways, bad.
How do you mean?
Well, if the Americans had gone ahead with their cocktail bar, etc., they would also have restored the hall at the same time. You know how thorough these Americans are. And it would virtually have been as good as new. Most people were happy when the scheme was dropped. Most local people, that is. Now, one American who was very keen on completing the scheme was a most charming and cultured man. I think he was in their Air Force intelligence section. He, too, was an historian, a professor at one of the Midwestern universities, as I recall it. Now, he wrote a pamphlet about the manor, which really should have been made into a book. You know how difficult things were during the war, and it was finally stenciled or something like that. There used to be a copy of it at the base, though. I understand it's been lost. Though I did hear there was another...
You can't remember the name of this professor.
Oh, yes, I can. Martindale. James Martindale.
Martindale. I'll make a note. Well, if you've no objections, I think I'll take Michelle up to the manor house.
What, at this time of night?
There's a moon.
Well, if you can follow the overgrown path opposite my front door, that'll take you right to it. Nobody uses it at night, you know, not even courting couples.
Thank you once again for your help, Mrs. Hughes.
Always a pleasure to see you, Mr. Rourke. I do hope you'll find time to address our society one day.
As soon as I've cleared up one or two things, I'd be delighted.
Well, you know where I am, call in any time. And a friend of Mr. Rourke's is always welcome here, Anna.
Thank you. I am fascinated by your old English houses and ghost stories.
Do you think you'll be all right going up to the manor in the dark?
Is there a ghost there as well?
Well, none that is recorded. But the last male member of the family was hanged outside the front door.
Eerie, I think, is the English word. I am quite nervous. Oh, what was that, Mr. Rock?
Some animal. Mrs. Hughes was right. This path's quite overgrown. We should be coming into a clearing soon. The water tilting green. On this branch.
Oh, yes. How beautiful the moonlight. Just look at the roof. It must be freezing. Hamlet could appear at one of those black staring windows and give a tortured soliloquy.
Yeah, well, I want to take a look inside.
Oh, dear.
Frightened again?
Scared to death, but enjoying every minute of it.
Will you take the torch?
Yes, please. Oh, there's something over there.
I'll point the torch at it.
There's something glistened in that undergrowth.
Branches have been broken down as if a tractor's been through. That's better. Now, shine the torch on the ground. That's it. Hey. These are tracks. Car tracks. Keep close to me.
You don't need to tell me that, Mr. Rock. But suppose there is someone in there. With your injuries, you have only one arm.
You've got a stiletto in your handbag.
How do you know that?
I looked in while you were asleep this afternoon.
You have no business to go in my handbag. It is, how do you say, bad form, bad manners.
So is carrying a dagger, Anna.
I bought it in an antique shop here in England.
What for?
To revenge my sister.
Yeah. I thought as much. There is something ahead of us. I think you'd better let me have the torch and stay here.
I'd rather face whatever it is with you than stay here on my own.
All right.
It's like someone's been making ready for a big fire.
We call it a bonfire. They've certainly stacked a lot of large branches.
Oh, with your injuries, you should not be doing this.
Just keep the light still. I'm not lifting, I'm just dragging them to one side. I have an expression about not being able to see the wood for the trees. That's better.
Through the gap you've made, there's the reflection again. Dark.
Car bodywork. That's what's reflecting. I think I can squeeze through the gap I've made.
Oh. Have you hurt yourself?
It's just the ribs the car dented. This car, in fact. Pass me the torch. There's something in the front seat.
Is he dead?
He's dead, all right. Stay there. Half the back of his head's blown off.
Do you know him?
A barman at the junction. He went missing after I spoke to him the other night.
Oh, I thought I saw something move.
But it wouldn't be him.
Beyond the car.
Okay, three. You have 60 seconds to come out with your arms above your head. 16, 15.
Behind you, Mr. Ross! Oh, what have you done to him?
Grab the woman. Okay, ladies, stop struggling. You two carry him out.
You killed him. You killed him.
Hey, she's got a dagger. Well, grab hold of her, one of you.
Oh, stop.
After Colin hit you, if she didn't try running him through with a dagger.
Yeah, serves you right for playing gangsters in an English wood. Used an antique English stiletto for that special occasion.
Well, fortunately, Cohen was wearing a thick coat. He'll be fine.
Well, in that case, perhaps you'll carry on. I can't say I'm entirely convinced by her explanations.
Well, we were staking out the wood. We found the car earlier today. You walked in. Now, it isn't easy to flush people out of a wood at night. So we used the tannoy to distract you and moved in. We hoped you'd still be listening to it, wondering how much time you had left.
Yeah, I was. Where am I now?
The Air Force base.
Oh, you're not going to tell me you're Air Force police again.
No, John. And not FBI. We're from the Federal Bureau of Narcotics. Another for you?
No, thanks. Drugs is the name of the game. How did I get into it?
Oh, we've been watching Max and his friends for 3 years. He'd been smuggling in heroin from Southeast Asia. We put a stop to that by getting him posted to Germany. Or, we thought we did. Max's syndicate had other plans. They worked out another route across Europe with Turkish-grown poppies. It was processed in Marseille, moved to the Germany. Somebody wanted to talk. They landed you with 8,000 pounds in German marks, which put you out of circulation for a time. But a jury finds you not guilty. And you start asking questions.
But they'd already prepared for that.
Oh, sure. By killing Miss Schiller's sister. They reckon, and rightly, that you'd work it out. But she had dropped the money in your briefcase. So, with $2 million at stake, they decided not to take any chances.
$2 million?
Oh, it could be more. That's the minimum value we put in the package they've got into England, ready to ship or fly out to the States. We want to get our hands on that heroin. And to knock out the number one man in England.
I think I might be able to find it.
Huh? Say that again.
I think I can help. But first, I need your organization.
Name it.
I need an open line and equipment to take wire pictures.
Oh, we have them already.
And then you need a professor of history called James Martindale, who was at a Midwestern university.
Oh. Well, how long ago?
Can't say, but he was over here during the war.
Well, then he could be dead or retired.
Could be. But I know he wrote a pamphlet about the manor while he was over here.
So?
So we need to find out where he is now, get his pamphlet, and wire it over.
I'll put agents onto it right away.
Fine. Sir, it's Agent Wright reporting from New York.
Thank you. I'll take it. Is that you, Wright?
Yeah, we traced Professor Martindale. He's living in San Francisco doing research on the early settlers. Agent Inkerman of our West Coast Bureau has made telephone contact with the professor, and he's on his way to meet him.
Oh, good.
He has a copy of the pamphlet he wrote on Bramble Manor while he was at Burwood Air Base. We should be wiring it to you inside the...
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot. Well, we should have your information for you very shortly. Now, John, can you tell me what it's all about?
It's about an act of Parliament made in the 27th year of Queen Elizabeth I in the year 1585. It made it high treason for a priest ordained after the Queen's accession to be in England. And the same act made it a felony punishable by death to harbour a priest. So, if any Catholic wanted his sacraments, he had to have a good place in which to hide a priest and the utensils for saying Mass, which is how the secret panels and the priest's hiding holes came to be in some of the stately homes of England.
John, are you trying to say that we're looking for a secret panel?
Yes, Marshal. We are, Marshal.
Well, for God's sake, let's get on with it.
So easily done. Various people have been searching for them for nearly 400 years.
But with modern equipment...
I've tried it. No two hiding holes are the same. They were made by night. Only the workman and the owner knew the secret. When the owner was driven out, or imprisoned or hanged, the secret usually died with him.
sometimes today they come to light when extensive alterations are being carried out, like I suspect the base commander was doing at Burwold Manor during the war. You see, I think that Professor Martindale realized the discovery and wrote about it. A pamphlet, or anyway, one of them, was kept in the base library. Max or someone read it, decided it would be the ideal place for the drugs, and destroyed the pamphlet so that no one else would see it.
So we sit back and wait for the pamphlet to be transmitted. It's coming now. I never thought I'd be looking for secret hiding holes in the damp and cold first light.
Underneath the fireplace. Yes, that's what Martindale says here.
Yeah, sure. The stone on the inside of the fireplace on the left-hand side can be pushed in.
Uh-huh.
It's not big enough to allow anyone through, but it releases a stone at the base that can be pulled forward. The hole made is just big enough for a man to get through. Okay, fellas, let's try it. Now, that's the first one. But where's the second stone?
This one.
Sure, but it can't possibly move the way it says.
Oh, come on, let's try it.
Ingenious. The other moves, too. The guy who designed this would have been a $1 million architect in the States today. Hey, there is a hole. Finally, see what's down there.
Okay. Here we go. These guys must have been thinner in the olden days. Pass me a torch. It's quite dark inside. Thanks.
How big?
Big enough to hold a couple of men.
Could they stand up in there?
Easily.
Is there room to sleep?
Yeah, but there's nobody here.
You'd have been disappointed, Rook. Did you expect to find Max and his buddy in there?
Call it more than a possibility.
Well, without that information, we would never have got this far.
Hey, I found something.
Well, what is it?
A package in waterproof covering.
Hand it up. Okay, I've got it. Now, let's take a look. Anyone got anything sharp?
Your antique stiletto, Anna.
I have it in my bag.
May I borrow it, Michelle?
Certainly.
I do believe we've hit the jackpot, Ron. Yeah. High-grade heroin. The best. Okay, finally, put it back.
Put it back? A fortune in heroin? Well, suppose something happens to it. We found heroin before, only for it to vanish again.
I want Max as well. But maybe I shouldn't be risking so much heroin, so we'll make up a package. But you've got to have a good bait for the really big fish.
What big fish?
The number one guy in Britain who's causing us so many headaches. For $2 million, someone's going to try and get other stuff.
Do you have any suspects?
Yeah. Everyone Max has ever spoken to. I suspect the publican had talked to you and then tipped us off. He used to give Max credit. I suspect the lady president of the local historical society you saw last night. Oh. Max had tea and cakes for the last week. He was obviously after something. I suspect every man, woman, or child who ever passed the time of day with Max. These drug syndicates have a fantastic network of operators. The pay is great, but once you become redundant, they bury you.
Like Hilda.
Yeah, like Hilda. Like the barman. Like a few thousand more who are no longer useful and might be able to point a finger at someone else in the organization. A quick assassination and the leak is sealed. It hasn't even become a leak. Not very nice people. People I don't mind waiting about to catch, no matter how long it takes. So let's take it out. Cohen, how is it your end?
It's all quiet since the pub closed.
How long ago?
About an hour. Wait a minute. The front door is opening.
Yeah, it's difficult picking up radio transmission in a wood.
You can hear those damn receivers a mile away. Who's going to walk into a wood when it's crackling with more two-way radios than twigs?
Yeah, we ought to spread out more. Maybe keep out of the wood altogether.
It's the publican who's coming out the front door. He's walking his dog.
What direction is he taking?
He's going towards the path.
If he's got a dog, I'd better get my men out of the wood. Finally, move back. We'll take our positions outside, out of hearing distance.
Publican is now turning away from Path. It looks as if he's returning to the pub.
All right, Cohen. Stay in position. I'll be coming to move you out in a few minutes.
You need his artillery and you can have a full-scale battle. Look, you've got too many men and you're making too much noise.
I can't take any chances.
That's exactly what you are doing. Get rid of all the radios and have one man at a time lying low. Damn radio receiver of yours is as good as a loudspeaker.
Suspect has crossed road to cottage of woman Hughes. She is at door. Both suspects are now engaged in conversation.
Yeah, most probably about the weather. Talking about the weather, it's starting to rain again.
Yeah.
As soon as it's opening time, you'll be one stakeout man less. He'll be having a hot rum.
On one condition only. You tell no one, absolutely no one, about finding the heroin.
Oh, not a soul. Oh, see what I mean about the rain. Do turn your collar up, Marshal. You American agents always look the part with upturned collars. I wonder what Anna's doing now.
Anna, yeah. We have her room at the inn bugged, if you really want to know.
What do you suspect her?
She's Hilda's sister. She's met
Max. Oh, come on, you can't...
English police car has drawn up with the burbled arms. No. No, it's not stopping. It's going on towards the base.
Police car has halted not far from me. Occupant now approaching through wood.
Yeah. I can see him for myself. Hey, it's Chief Inspector Norris. He's probably looking for me to tell me I'm back in the force.
Don't go out to him.
Oh, come on. Surely you don't suspect a Chief Inspector. Hey, he's going towards the manor, right enough.
To the east wing.
To the fireplace. He's hit him over the head.
Taking no chances.
Hope he's good at unarmed combat. Norris was a Marine commando. See what I mean?
Okay. Hold it! Freeze! We're federal agents!
Show me your authority for going round in this country with guns. Oh. And for attacking police officers in the course of their duty.
You were going towards the fireplace. Do you deny it?
Of course I was. Call off these bloodthirsty Apaches.
You haven't said why you were going towards the fireplace, Frank.
Because I wanted to take a good look at it, that's why. I've had Constable Harris off crosswords. He hasn't put pen to one for 24 hours. He's been finding out about priests' hiding holes. He tells me they were often under the fireplace.
Oh, are you okay, Violet?
Oh, I feel I want to double up again. He caught me high and low like an axe.
When someone hits me on the head and knocks me flat on my face in the mud, what does he expect? I saw a pub up the road. I think I'll go there and get cleaned up. Rourke?
Yes?
I want a word with you. You better come along, too. That's better. Very kind of you to let me use your room, Miss Shiller.
How did you get so muddy?
I met some American Indians in the wood doing a war dance.
I wouldn't say too much about them at the moment.
Oh, why not? And what precisely are you doing up there on a chair?
Got it. Looking for a bug. An electronic one. Yeah, seems to have killed it off. They got the room bugged. In case Anna was involved.
They cannot think I killed my own sister.
Oh, they're nothing if not thorough. Over-conscientious.
Like ants all over the place with radios. They'll be suspecting the residents of Buckingham Palace next. Though they're damned efficient, I'll give them that, these Federals. One of their brass hats has been in contact with the Home Office, who in turn have been in communication with the Chief. You're reinstated, John. But I'm in trouble.
You?
Aye. It's that forthright Irish sister whose motherly instincts you brought out. She's complained to the Home Office about me bringing pressure to bear on a sick patient in order to make him leave hospital against medical advice. I've to go before the Chief Constable.
Oh, quite right, too. Disgusting tactics. Anybody who didn't know what you were up to would have been confessing to all sorts of crimes they hadn't committed.
Well, you'd better be my chief witness and say you volunteered, or else your life as a detective under me will be a misery. Now then, to get back to business. They've found the heroine, but Max and his pal are still running around loose, and so is the top man in England. I suppose they'll be staying up all night watching for someone to claim the heroine. Another storm brewing by the sound of it. We'll make ourselves comfortable down in the bar, I think.
Two pints and a sherry. Nasty night, though.
Ah, it is. Cozy enough in here.
I'll bring them over.
Thanks. You're looking thoughtful, Rourke.
Am I?
What happened to you this afternoon?
Oh, I went to the local library and then to a local resident for a pamphlet.
Oh, what about secret panels?
Yep.
And what did you find?
Nothing. Just had some kind of nagging suspicion at the back of my mind.
The sherry's for the lady, is it?
That's right.
A bitter for you.
Yeah. and some nuts, too, please. Look, I'll come back with you and I'll get them.
I think the Chief Inspector wants to ask a few questions in private.
Yes, it is the general impression. Cheers.
Cheers. The Chief Inspector was right. You are, how do you say, the mind thinking of something else?
Far away. Distant.
Distant, yes.
I keep thinking about Gerard.
Gerard?
John Gerard. He's a priest who escaped from the Tower of London. Was he hid in a hiding hole for several days or even weeks? The guy who built them was Nicholas Owen.
Nicholas? Saint Nicholas?
Named after him. Saint himself, no. He was Father Gerard's companion. What did Gerard said about him? I made a note of it this afternoon. There it is. Gerard said of Nicholas, who was also known as Little John because of his small stature, he was the immediate occasion of saving the lives of many hundreds of persons.
You made a lot of notes. Quite neat. I can read them nearly all. That is Nicholas, is it?
Mm. Yes.
Never made two same, so if one discovered, did not endanger others. Cecil had him tortured. Cecil?
Robert Cecil, Queen's Minister.
Cecil had him tortured. Died without revealing secrets of hiding holes. Poor man.
Oh, no. He's happy to die a martyr.
Well, on the other side of the page, you have written something else that I cannot read. It looks like boats.
Say that again.
Boats?
That's it.
Well, where are we going?
Back to Burwell's Manor.
Okay, okay. So all I said was I find your English police method sort of quaint.
He kicked me when it hurt, Seth. What? He kicked me.
Sure, Max. You just keep talking.
Of course I kicked him. He had a gun. I hadn't. And he was about to use it on Rourke.
Well, this beer's gone a bit flat in the meantime, but thanks for your help, Chief Inspector. Your help.
Well, when I saw you bolt out of here followed by Miss Shiller...
Bolt. That was the missing word I wanted. I remembered another technique the Elizabethan builders used. They made the priest hole, as it's called, but not only that. When a priest hole was discovered, the searchers generally found it empty. And why?
Because there was often another hiding place behind it, or even under it.
Right. A bolt hole. So, Max, Benner, and Stan here, they were inside that bolt hole all the time we were searching?
Even when I was inside of that fireplace?
Yep. They were holed up there, thinking all they had to do was to sit it out until you and your posse rode away.
But the package... $2 million worth. Now, why leave all that heroin behind?
Well, Maxie, why?
It took us by surprise, that's why. We was in the priest hole when we heard someone come. We put out our torch. It's dark. Stan here, he phones. It's just time to get ourselves in a bolt hole.
But not your precious package of drugs.
Quite a game of cat and mouse, eh, Marshal? You, Dick Coyne, and Mr. Vinely waiting on the outside while your quarry are holed up on the inside.
Ah, too true. Only we didn't know it, John, and so about an hour ago, I called my men back from the stakeout.
Not too far back, though, I'm glad to say. Manchester C Division isn't used to dealing with the Max Venners of this world. So, we're learning.
Ah, which reminds me, I want names from you, Maxie boy.
Don't we all?
Ah, but I have a way with me, Chief Inspector, for all our wild Apache games. But words this time, rather than deeds. Max, how would you like it if I cable stateside and have it put around that you've been sitting here, English pub style, with us, and have been cooperating with the Bureau, and that I'm sending you back to be released?
You'll be dead before I arrive, and you know
it. Yeah, so it found. Better start naming names.
The manager's office is this way.
Come in.
Just stay as you are, please, sir.
He's going to withdraw. Oh, I'll take him. You all right, Chief Inspector?
I got winged on the top of my right arm. Take him down to the patrol car and then drive me to the hospital.
Well, if it isn't my old friend, Chief Inspector of Police, who makes my patients leave hospital when they should be in bed.
Ah, he's all right now. In fact, he brought me here. And because of you, I have to appear in front of the Chief Constable.
Oh, so, my tough detective, you're ready to apologize.
Who told you that?
The doctor says you're first to have an anti-tetanus injection before he looks at your wound. Oh, hello, Mr. Rourke. How are you? A lot better, it seems.
Ah, it's all cleared up, sister.
And he'd have been just as happy to pin it on you.
Oh, I don't think so.
Well, now, will you turn over for your injection, Chief Inspector?
Now, the sight of a needle has always made me feel a bit off, sister, so
go easy.
Oh, now, I always find the biggest and the toughest of them faint away at the sight of a little tiny needle.
Oh!
All over. Well, I hope they keep you in. I've got to give you a few more injections. Now, Mr. Rourke, would you like a nice cup of tea?
Well, thanks all the same, sister, but I want to catch a girl before she boards a plane.
Oh, I see.
Just a moment, Rourke. First of all, will you
now,
kindly...
Now, Chief Inspector, we can't have shouting in this hospital, or you'll get another jab. So just compose yourself until the doctor comes, and forget about giving orders.
No.
And you, John Rourke, outside. I don't want you disturbing the patient. Off you go, or she'll have blown away.
Will
Mr. Shaw Venus, the passenger of the Dublin, please go to the
information desk? And will Miss Anna Schiller, passenger of the
Dusseldorf, go to the information desk? My heart leaps up when I behold...
John!
You haven't finished the verse.
A rainbow in the sky, and I could wish my days to be bound each to each by natural piety.
The dark windows of my room seem much more cheerful when you're about.
Mine too.
Have you got to take this plane?
I have a seat booked, but...
Mrs. Lee may have a meal waiting.
In that case, I cannot let Mrs. Lee down. She doesn't like good food going cold.
I'm due for some leave.
I am fascinated by your stately homes.
We could tour them together. You look shocked.
Together? I'm afraid...
That you wouldn't go touring with a fellow unless there'd been the blessings of nuptials and he'd taken you for better or worse until death do us part. Well, you know, having a touring honeymoon of England used to be the done thing.
You're teasing me now.
No. We have an English expression.
What expression?
And many a true word is spoken in jest. It's the only way to overcome that terrible English reserve that foreigners don't like. But you can have a formal proposal if you like.
What girl doesn't deep down want a formal proposal? But that must wait till later. Mrs. Lee's tea will be getting cold.
That was The Dark Windows of a Room, written especially for this week's Saturday Night Theatre by William Keenan. The part of John Rourke was played by Brian Truman. Inspector Norris by Jeffrey Banks, and Anna by Jane Knowles. Those making special guest appearances in this first production from the new broadcasting house Manchester were Peter Wheeler as the taxi driver, Peter Massey as Harry, barman at the Club Crazy Horse, Geoffrey Wheeler as the BBC Northern newsreader, Violet Carson as Mrs. Lee, the landlady, Philip Jenkinson as a barman at the Junction Nightclub and a street busker, Wilfred Pickles as manager of Mr. Pip's Club and the villain of the piece, Herbert Smith as Max Venner, Sandra Chalmers as a woman bystander, Billy Whitelaw as the Irish nursing sister, Brian Martin as the publican at the Burwold Arms, Nigel Davenport as Marshal Dean of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, Alan Rothwell as Dick Cohen, Madeline Vache as Mrs. Hughes, Paul Webster as Vinely of the Federal Bureau, and Brian Forbes, who portrayed Agent White on the transatlantic telephone call. The theme music and the song were composed by Simon Park, with special stereo effects by David Fleming Williams. The Dark Windows of a Room was produced by Trevor Hill. And this is Judith Chalmers, on behalf of all of us in the play, who started our careers here, wishing you goodbye from Manchester.
Billy Whitelaw is currently appearing in alphabetical order at the Mayfair Theatre, London.